Welcome to Why So Weekend, WYSO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. On today's program, the second installment of our reinvention stories. Today, we meet tattoo artist Kevin Rochamel. We've got Politics Ohio and Poor Will's Almanac up first. I'm honored to be speaking this morning with Dr. Alveda King, Pastoral Associate and Director of African American Outreach with Priests for Life and founder of King for America. Dr. King, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Dr. King, as the nation and the world prepare to honor your uncle, the late Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., tomorrow, on the holiday that was named for him, I'd like to first ask that you share some of your memories of the man.
Well, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. is certainly a man of God, loves the Lord, loves the Word of God, and I remember that, just some little personal things, he actually really enjoyed fried chicken, and my mother's sweet potato pie. You know, my mom, his sister-in-law, was a great cook, and in the midst of the battle, they would bring home the warriors from the road, and sometimes my Aunt Coretta was good at making homemade vegetable soup. My mom was good at making sweet potato pies, so I remember that. I remember that he really, really genuinely loved the Lord, and he also read that Bible, not just use it as a ceremonial piece, because we know that a couple of days from now, President Obama is going to use the Lincoln Bible and the Martin Luther King Jr. Bible to be sworn back into office. And so sometimes those are ceremonial efforts, but Martin Luther King Jr. actually read that Bible, lived by it, and did it. Not as a perfect man, but a man who loved the Lord, and that's why his prophetic memory for me is that many people thought that he was like a black Moses, or a modern-day apostle of love. And so those are things that I remember about my uncle.
As you have noted this year, there are a number of significant anniversaries, 150 years since the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation, and 50 years since your uncle's I Have a Dream speech. I wonder if you might offer your perspective on these historic milestones and how the world of today has progressed. Do you think it reconciles with the vision your uncle had?
Well, I believe that the vision that my uncle had is still unfolding. This is 50 years after, in August of this year, and we're still on the road or on the way. So I don't believe we've actually realized that dream, even with the election of the president and things like that, but that was all part of it. And so as we remember that, as we celebrate, you know, January 1st of this year, 2013, was 150 years of the emancipation of the slaves. And then in August, you'll have 50 years of the I Have a Dream speech. Also, there's 40 years of the landmine decision of Roe versus Wade, which made abortion legal. I say landmine because it really ended up with a lot of dead children. So we've got all these things happening in 2013, still remembering the dream of Dr. King. And I'm thinking that we're going to have to remember that he loved the Lord, that he loved the Word of God, that he stood on that. He wrote, one of my favorite sermons was Rediscovering Lost Values. That's one of my favorite sermons that he preached. And, you know, kids today would say, oh, that's old-fashioned. You don't want to go back to old values. But it's not so much going back to old-fashioned times, but taking those timeless truths that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. believed in. He said, we need to learn to live together as brothers and sisters, or we would perish as fools. And so we've got to learn to live together. We need to know that tolerance and pride and guns, those are not going to solve our problems, but it's going to be God's love. It's going to be humility, that genuine caring and listening to each other. And so those are things, you know, because for instance, even on this gun control issue now, my uncle was shot with a gun, Dr. King was, my grandmother was, but my dad was killed in the Civil Rights Movement without a gun. And if you take all the guns off the planet, people have knives, people have bombs, you know, all kinds of things, because we have to change people's hearts. And that's what Martin Luther King Jr. was about. He wasn't about politics. He was about the human heart and teaching us to love each other.
As you said, your father, Reverend A.D. King, was Dr. King's brother, and as you have stated, most people don't know that Dr. King had a brother or that he was also slain as part of the Civil Rights Movement. Can you tell us about your father?
Well, my father, Reverend A.D. King, was a major strategist in the movement. He and my uncle were often called the Sons of Thunder, And as the Sons of Thunder, they were Baptist preachers. And so they actually worked together in the civil rights movement. And you can really find more about my dad. He helped start the Poor People's Campaign. I'm sorry about the background noise. Please forgive me. But you can find out more about my dad at the adkingfoundation.com.
And can you also tell us about King for America, an organization that you are a founder?
King for America is a faith-based organization, a Christian organization, working to help people enhance their lives spiritually, physically, intellectually, economically, socially. And so these are the things that we do.
In 1965, Dr. King gave the commencement address here at Antioch College. It's an inspiring speech, and we've been playing it for a number of years since we pulled it out of the archives. It was one of the first archival speeches that we had digitized and preserved, and we will be playing a portion of that today. He was such a great speaker and had such a tremendous impact for the people who heard his words, and I wonder if you could just offer some final thoughts before we leave you today.
I would like to Antioch and to your whole community and to all of your listening audiences, please be encouraged. Please continue to hold to those values that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. held dear. And when you see the Bible of Martin Luther King Jr. in the news in the next few days, I pray that that will inspire you to get your own Bible and read it. God bless you.
Dr. Alveda King, thanks so much for speaking with us today.
Well, thank you so much to you and your listening audience.
This is WISO Weekend on WYSO. Thanks for joining us this Sunday morning. Here for you now is an excerpt from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s 1965 commencement address at Antioch College.
Man, through his scientific genius, has been able to dwarf distance and place time in change. And our jet planes have compressed into minutes distances that once took weeks and even months. I think Bob Hope has adequately described this new jet age in which we live, and it is not usual that a Baptist preacher would be quoting Bob Hope, but I think he's adequately described this new jet age. He said it is an age in which it's possible to take a nonstop flight from Los Angeles, California, to New York City, a distance of almost 3,000 miles. And if on taking off in Los Angeles you develop hiccups, you will hick in Los Angeles and cup in New York City. You know it is possible, because of the time difference, to take a flight from Tokyo, Japan on Sunday morning and arrive in Seattle, Washington on the preceding Saturday night. And when your friends meet you at the airport and ask when you left Tokyo, you will have to say, "I left tomorrow." Now, this is a bit humorous, but I'm trying to laugh a basic fact into all of us. And it is simply this, that the world in which we live is geographically one. And through our scientific and technological genius, we have made of this world a neighborhood. Now, through our moral and ethical commitment, we must make of it a brotherhood. We must all learn to live together as brothers, or we will all perish together as fools. This is a great challenge facing our nation and our world today. As I said, no individual can live alone, no nation can live alone. We are interdependent. I remember some time ago, Mrs. King and I had the privilege of journeying to that great country known as India. I never will forget the experience. It was a marvelous experience to meet and greet the great leaders of India, to meet and talk with hundreds and thousands of people all over the cities and villages of that vast country. These experiences will remain dear to me as long as the cords of memory shall lengthen. This morning I say to you, my friends, that there were those depressing moments. How can one avoid being depressed when he sees with his own eyes evidences of millions of people going to bed hungry at night? How can one avoid being depressed when he sees with his own eyes millions of people sleeping on the sidewalks at night? They have no beds to sleep in. They have no houses to go in. How can one avoid being depressed when he discovers that out of India's population of more than 400 million, some 380 million make an annual income of less than $90 a year, and most of these people have never seen a physician or a dentist? As I noticed these conditions, something within me cried out, can we in America stand idly by and not be concerned? An answer came, oh no, because the destiny of the United States is tied up with the destiny of India and every other nation. And I started thinking about the fact that we spend in our country millions of dollars a day to store surplus food. And I said to myself, I know where we can store that food free of charge, in the wrinkled stomachs of the millions of God's children in Asia and in Africa, in South America, and in our own nation, who go to bed hungry at night. And it may well be that we have spent far too much of our national budget establishing military bases around the world rather than bases of genuine concern and understanding. All I'm saying is simply this, that all life is interrelated. We are all caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly, it affects all indirectly. For some strange reason, I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be, and you can never be what you ought to be until I am what I ought to be. This is the interrelated structure of reality. John Donne caught it years ago and placed it in graphic terms. No man is an island in tithe itself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. And then he goes on toward the end to say, any man's death diminishes me because I am involved in mankind. Therefore, never sin to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee.
That was an excerpt from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s 1965 commencement address at Antioch College. You can hear the full speech on our website at wyso.org. Celebrations in honor of the civil rights leader will continue over the next couple of days. And to get information on just some of those events, I spoke with Chase Jones, a student and graduate assistant in the Office of Multicultural Affairs on the University of Dayton campus.
Well, I know for us here at the University of Dayton next week, Monday, we will be in support of the march and rally. We'll meet downtown around 9:30 a.m. The march will start from the Charles E. Drew Health Center on 3rd Street, and we'll make our way to the Dayton Convention Center. Before that, we'll have snacks, coffee, drinks, things like that for students here, and give them the opportunity to make posters that they can carry in the march. And once we get to the rally should begin around 10:30, and lots of events lined up for that. It's going to be a fantastic time. We ask that everyone come out and enjoy. On Tuesday of next week, we will have an open forum discussion, a dialogue discussion here on campus in our Science Center, allowing individuals to come in and talk about what they saw in the week prior and what experiences they've had with the theme from the march to the movement. We've discussed a lot with service and social justice groups and service and social action clubs here on campus about how we can move from just a one-day march in celebration of Dr. King into more of a movement on our campuses and in our community to solidify who we are as a people and that we are all in this together as brothers and sisters. And so we'll have an open forum with some student groups, faculty and staff, and everyone's welcome to come and just kind of discuss what they think should be some events or activities they'd like to see in the coming semesters or years here at UD's campus. And then also on Wednesday, we'll have our closing event called Now What? And essentially, it's a charge to say, okay, we've seen these things, we've discussed this, now what do we do with it? How do we do it? And we'll have several of those student clubs present to recruit new membership and to share what their vision and mission is, what they do here on campus and in the community. And then we'll also have a closing charge from our president, Dr. Dan Kern. And then from there, we kind of send students out in hopes that they'll actually put some of these things into action.
Setting up these events, do you have a good number of students who participate in the planning as well?
We have an overall committee that works here on campus that's comprised half of staff and administration and half of students. The students do a lot of the technology, social networking, updating the Facebook, the Twitter, the creating the flyers and events, and then word of mouth on the ground. They're the ones out there telling other students about what we're doing, and they've been tied to it, they've participated in it, and they've helped out with it. So it really encourages participation.
And you've also been working with other campuses, other organizations on events?
Indeed. I have worked with a few of the colleges in the area, including Sinclair Community College, Wright State University, Central State, West Campus, I believe it's the Dayton campus, just to share what events we're doing on our respective campuses and to let each other know, hey, you're welcome to come over here and participate in this, or someone else can go to their events. I know we have a speaker coming up on Tuesday night, Ibu Patel, and that will begin at 7 p.m. in the RecPlex here at the University of Dayton. And it's an event that's open to the public, and he is an amazing speaker. And so anyone who wants to come and join is welcome to, and so we try to publicize that with the other organizations. And then in regards to work with the City of Dayton Committee, we decided to have nonprofit organizations, service organizations, give them tables in the rally so that they can set up and share their mission and vision, share what they do, and talk about how they're a part of the movement, how they're a part of this changing face of social action.
What's the best resource for people who want to find out about what's going on in the next couple of days?
You can go online and check out mlkdayton.org, and it will list all of the events across the community, including some of the colleges and institutions and what they are doing. The MLK breakfast, the march and the rally, all of those dates, times, and locations should be on that website and up to date, and that would be your best resource.
Chase Jones with University of Dayton, thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you.
And stay tuned to WISO on Monday as we offer some special programming to celebrate the life of Martin Luther King Jr. This is WISO Weekend.
This holiday weekend, American Roots celebrates Dr. Martin Luther King in sound and spirit. Hear reflections on the civil rights leader from Julian Bond, Mabel John, and Harry Belafonte. Plus music for the moment and the movement from Odetta and Johnny Cash, The Roots, and Duke Ellington. I'm Nick Spitzer. Join me for American Roots from PRX.
This afternoon at 2, where else but WISO?
This year, WISO presents Reinvention Stories, a multimedia storytelling project that asks the question, how does a city of inventors reinvent itself? In today's story, we meet Kevin Rotremel, a tattoo artist at Truth and Triumph Tattoo in Belmont. Rotremel grew up in Elkhart, Indiana, and came to the Miami Valley to attend Cedarville College. He studied finance and then communications, but the business world wasn't for him, so he reinvented himself.
I never would have guessed that I would be able to make a living doing art. I had a couple sales jobs, management jobs, tried out a few different careers and just searching for something I really enjoyed. You know, I had jobs that paid a lot of money, but I just came home at the end of the day stressed out. I worked out of Cincinnati, and my territory went all the way up to Troy. And I was driving around in a non-air-conditioned Jeep Wrangler in a suit and tie. And it was about, I'd say probably 95 degrees out. And I stopped in Yellow Springs on my way back to hang out with some of my college friends that live there. And they're sitting around drinking beers and playing video games. And I was just like, well, why aren't I doing this now? You know, I mean, it just seemed like a lot more fun. I was like, you know, I can just live a lot more frugal and, you know, just hang out and enjoy it right now. Because I don't know what I want to do. I didn't want to do that job. So, yeah, I just walked in on Monday morning in shorts and a tank top. I told him I was quitting my job. I was like, sorry, you got the wrong guy. You know, this just isn't for me. And started a new life. I'd been kind of in the tattoo business selling artwork to tattoo shops. And people kept on telling me you needed to learn how to tattoo. And I still never wanted to. Even though I'd been drawing my whole life, it was like trial by fire, because when you're a kid and you're drawing, you know, I'm drawing, you know, skulls and flames and flying eyeballs and stuff like that, you know, drawing the Van Halen logo and things. And then next thing, this girl wants a little flower, you know, with a heart and some wings and a halo on it. And I'm like, I don't know how to draw that, you know. So you really have to just, it's amazing how much you learn tattooing as far as broadening your horizons in art. When I tattoo, every day I've got a different person with different skin and a different body part. It is challenging. It's something that you'd never, you know, I don't think you ever master. You just keep learning. I remember my mom, when I told her I was going to learn how to tattoo, she said, well, isn't there anything else you can do with your art? And I said, and make money? No, it's pretty difficult, you know. I've offered free tattoos for the whole family. I don't have any takers yet, you know. And that's cool. I think my dad should get a tattoo for, they've been married 50 years now this year. And I think he needs to get like a classic heart with a banner and my mom's name on him or something. So maybe I can talk him into it. But I think they're happy for me. I found a job where I could use my skills. You know, I'm doing well. And, you know, lately I feel like I've, you know, developed more of a style. And I have clients coming to me for the style of tattoo I do, which makes it a lot more fun. They give me a lot more freedom. You know, I had a piece last week where a guy wanted a half sleeve and just wanted me to do something cool. So that's always fun.
It's a very simple machine, really.
This shop is extremely busy. People come from all over. You know, we got a lot of local people, but there's been customers coming in, you know, all the way from out in California, you know, that come out to visit and, like, have heard of our shop and want to get tattooed here. You get random people, and a lot of guys here go out to conventions, you know, traveling around and tattooing also. I couldn't imagine working anywhere else. I mean, there's other great shops out there, but I feel so lucky to be here. I love tattooing. I always tell people I haven't worked a day in 10 years. You know, all I do is show up and listen to music and draw on people, you know. So it's awesome. You know, if I'm off for more than 3-4 days, I can't wait to do a tattoo. So I think I've made the right move.
That was Kevin Rotermel of Truth and Triumph Tattoo in Belmont. To see Kevin's work, check out a short film on WYSO.org. Today's Reinvention Story was produced by Kyle Wilkinson, Chandra Jones, and Sarah Buckingham. Reinvention Stories is brought to you by WYSO and Local Lore, a national initiative produced by AIR, the Association of Independents in Radio, Incorporated, in collaboration with ZEGA, with financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac for the first week of late winter. Now the year is 3 weeks old and late winter has begun. It often seems by this time of year that the cold will never end and that the nights will never be short enough. But on January 27th, the day's length, now growing at the rate of 2 minutes every 24 hours, reaches 10 hours all along the 40th parallel. The dark morning sky already prophesies the summer. An hour before sunrise, Orion has set. Sirius, the dog star, has moved deep into the west, Cancer and Gemini following it. The Big Dipper is overhead. June's Arcturus is coming in from the east, and August's Vega has risen in the northeast. Last week, the titmice were calling, and this week the owls are courting, and the great flocks of crows are breaking up, and the cardinals will start to sing half an hour before dawn. In 2 weeks, doves will call. In 3 weeks, the skunk cabbage will be open. In 4 weeks, the sap will run in the maples, and the snowdrops and aconites will bloom. In 5 weeks, the crocus will blossom, and the pussy willows will almost all be out. In 7 weeks, the daffodils will flower, and goldfinches will turn gold. In 8 weeks, bright forsythia will bloom, and then the wildflowers of middle spring will come in all at once. It seems that spring will never get here. But really, there's hardly time to get ready. This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. I'll be back again next week with notes for the second week of late winter. In the meantime, don't wait too long. Spring is almost here.
Bill Felker contributes to newspapers nationwide, including the Yellow Springs News. Bill resides in Yellow Springs. Poor Will's Almanac is also available as a podcast at WYSO.org.
Welcome to Politics Ohio. I'm Emily McCord. Democrats this week released their agenda for what they plan on doing in the next coming weeks in the legislature. Joe Ingles from our Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau joins me to talk about it today. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
So what do Democrats hope to tackle?
Well, they say their number one priority is job creation, job development, and, you know, expanding small businesses, helping small businesses. But they're also talking about other areas. For example, when you look at energy, the whole fracking issue, they want to make sure that they get some environmental bills passed to make sure that fracking doesn't cause problems with wastewater and that sort of thing. And they're talking about, of course, education, their perennial favorite. They want to make sure that some headway is made on that, fixing some of the funding formula so it's not so over-reliant on property taxes. They're talking about the voting laws, the three-day weekend before Election Day that Democrats fought for in court and eventually got in this past election. They want to codify that, make sure that that's there in the future, especially that Sunday.
Democrats are in the minority. I mean, Republicans outweigh Democrats by a large margin.
Right, a supermajority.
Mm-hmm. What is the point of Democrats releasing an agenda to some extent?
Well, I think there are several points. Number one, as a Democrat, you want your constituents to know that you're trying to make a difference. You want them to know what your goals, what your ideas are going into it, so that you can point to it and say, you know, even if it didn't go through, even if it didn't happen, you could say, well, you know, I supported this legislation over here, and it was those Republicans that didn't do that. I think also they're trying to send a message as to the things that they consider important. So by setting priorities for their, even though they know that they cannot in and of themselves make these happen, but by setting these priorities and saying, this is what we're interested in doing, this is the way we're interested in doing it, they are sending a message to the majority, Republicans, telling them you'll have bipartisan support if you kind of go this way and you know, include us in that fold.
What is the incentive for Republicans to work with Democrats?
Well, I think that going into an election year, I think that we're going to hear John Kasich, Governor Kasich, talk about bipartisan support for his projects. He doesn't want to have another Senate Bill 5 kind of situation where he has a very divisive, very partisan fight. That really doesn't help him well when he's going into reelection. As far as the General Assembly, they also like to be able to talk about having bipartisan solutions to problems. And of course, if you've got bipartisan solution to something or a bipartisan bill that's approved, then all of the blame, if it doesn't work out, doesn't come back on one party. So, you know, that's another point of having bipartisan legislation. But that being said, we all know at the first of a General Assembly, any General Assembly, we all have the happy, warm, oh, we're going to work together kind of attitude. And the first time something contentious comes up, some of that goes out the window.
Is this, you know, historically, is this unusual to have such a disparity between the parties?
No, actually, it's not. In Ohio, if you look at the last 20 years of government, it's been pretty much Republican control the entire time, except for the Strickland years. And even then, the Senate was controlled by Republicans. But for the most part, when Governor Taft was in office, the legislature was totally Republican. And now that Governor Kasich's in office, every single statewide office and all of the legislature is controlled by Republicans.
So what's it going to be like to be a Democrat as in the super minority, I suppose, in this coming legislature?
Well, it's going to be tough. it would be tough for them to get their legislation through as they would like to have it. However, they do have the bully pulpit, and I think we will definitely hear from the Democrats on issues. Even if they can't get their way with those issues or get the legislature to pass their bills, we will still hear from them on what they would like to have.
I've been speaking with Joe Ingles from the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Thanks for being here today.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
That's it for this week's edition of WISO Weekend. I'm Jerry Kenney. Thanks to all our guests, and thank you for listening to member-supported 91.3 WISO, Yellow Springs, Dayton, Springfield, and online at WISO.org, a broadcast service of Antioch University for the Miami Valley. Coming up next, The Book Monk.